This is an oral history interview with Phyllis Case, daughter of Philip Schools, P.C. Schools of the Western Colorado Power Company. Mrs. Case lived in this region near Durango, grew up here, and now lives in Oregon. The interview is being conducted on Monday, July 26, 1999, in a classroom in the basement of Reed Library at Fort Lewis College. The interviewer is Todd Ellison, representing the Center of Southwest Studies, Fort Lewis College, Durango, Colorado. Phyllis, thanks for being willing to be interviewed.
You're very welcome.
Wonderful that you helped us last week with the Elder Hostel team here, and now that you can tell us some about PC Schools, your dad, and all that. Tell us about his dad, maybe, to start with.
All right. His dad came from, he was a immigrant and came into Canada, New Brunswick. I don't know, remember the name of the town, but in New Brunswick, Canada. And then moved into Minnesota. That's where my father was born. And then eventually they moved to the west to Idaho. And he was great on horses. He had wonderful horses that they used in those days for pulling mining equipment and doing heavy farm vehicles and so forth. And Dad grew up in Idaho. Then eventually, after Dad came to Colorado, Grandpa came at his request to be the manager of the Ilium Power Plant, and he stayed there for years and years. They lived there for a long time.
And what was your grandfather's name?
Nicholas Schools.
Okay. And about when would it have been that he came to Colorado to work at Ilium?
I would guess about in the early 20s, probably no earlier than 25.
Uh-huh.
Could be a little bit earlier, but I think about that time.
Oh. Well, good. Any more we should say about Nicholas?
I think not.
Yeah.
His wife was Flora Jane Schools. She, of course, came with him, and they had their house there, had the manager's house there, and then they also had a caretaker's house at Ilium. And it was a beautiful spot. We used to go there in the summer, and my sister and I used to enjoy the summer times there. It's a wonderful place to go and spend the summer. It's 7 miles outside of Telluride. And so Telluride was a little town at that time, and we used to go into Telluride to buy groceries and so forth, have ice cream cones and whatnot.
What did Telluride look like in the...
Oh, my goodness, there was one street. Well, there were really two streets, but the main street. And there was a lovely hotel there. It was an old hotel, Sheridan, I think it was called. And it was a drugstore. The Western Colorado Power Company had an office there. And the usual kind of dry goods stores and that sort of thing. And there was a hospital two or three blocks away, which is now the museum up there. And that was where my sister was born when they lived in Telluride.
Now, how many children did Nicholas and his wife have?
They had one son, and then they adopted a daughter. So there were really two children that grew up with them.
Uh-huh. And what brought your dad out to Colorado?
Well, his mother wanted him to go to the University of Idaho to take ag. And Dad just couldn't see it. So he, after his mother put him on the train to go to Idaho, he went on to Pullman and entered the University of Washington, which it was Washington State. It wasn't the University of Washington, it was Washington State College at that time. And he entered Pullman because he decided that electricity was going to be the coming thing, and he wanted to find out and have that for his career, which he did. He graduated from Pullman in 1905, I believe, and also took mechanical engineering and graduated in 1906. It's either 5 and 6 or 6 and 7, and I'm not sure. I'll have to let you know about that. Then, in the meanwhile, he had good friends, J.A. Clay, whose name you may know around here, and his wife, May, kind of took him under their wing. And Clay's moved to Colorado and In the meanwhile, Dad had started working, mucking in the mines for his summertime school money. And then when he got through with school, he started there as an electrician in the mines in Idaho, Burke, Idaho. And Clay sent for him after a few years, and I'm not sure just when he came to Colorado, but I believe it must have been about in 1911 or something like that. And Clay wanted him to be an electrician at the mine up in Telluride, and I believe it was the Tomboy mine. And so Dad took the job, and he was not married at that time, so he came and took the mine at Tomboy, or took the job at Tomboy Mine, and as an electrician. And I'm not going to say this, so maybe somebody else will understand it, but I'll tell you what I know about it. He was the first one to use alternating current to move power from the lower elevations to the higher elevations. He was the first one to make that application. And because as a new engineer grad student, he understood about that. And up until that time, they were using direct current, very expensive and very inefficient. So that was the first use of alternating current. And somebody else will have to explain how that works, but anyway, that...
Because that was first used in 1881.
Well, so. But he was the first one that applied it in this situation, as I understand it. Anyway, he worked at the mines for a while. In the meanwhile, Clay had been employed by Western Colorado Power Company, which is was a part of Utah Power and Light. And he asked Dad then if he would come over to Western Colorado Power Company, and that's when Dad joined the power company.
And so what was it like to work for the power company, do you think?
Well, of course, that was his life from then on, and he always appreciated the power company and his job. He liked it very well. He became superintendent and was the one who was in charge of the crews that built the lines over the high mountains all around here. The power system at that time included Delta and Montrose. Don't think it went to Nacharita. I think it went to, might have included Mancos, Durango, Silverton, Telluride, and I'm not sure about the outlying areas. It changed somewhat over the years.
And as he was superintendent over the whole area,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what did he do before he was appointed superintendent?
Well, I suppose he just kind of worked his way up.
Uh-huh.
I've never heard that he worked on a crew.
Yeah.
I just think that at that time, engineers were in such short supply that he probably just went into that field almost fresh, new,
mm-hmm.
Because there weren't very many electrical engineers around at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he understood the layout of the lines and all of that, so I don't think there was anybody ahead of him at that time.
Can you remember what a normal day or a normal week would have been for him when he was working as the superintendent?
Yes, he had normal office hours. He worked in the Newman Building in Durango. Their offices were on the second floor. I've looked up at that window, and I believe it was the second floor. When you go up the stairs, I think he went around the corner and into his office, the first one there. Clay was the next one, and his secretary, and then Clay, and then the draftsman on down the hall. And but when they were building lines, which would be only in the summertime, he was out with the crews and spent probably most of the week. But he got home most of the weekends. He wasn't gone for long times.
How would they get to their work sites when they were?
They usually established camps,
uh-huh.
And they all stayed at this central location, the plant where the camps were. They had a boarding house, had a cook, and probably 20 men around the table with long forks to get to the piece of meat first, you know.
Yeah.
And I went lots of times with them too, and ate around the table, so I know exactly how it was.
Oh, well, tell us more about what you remember, what that was like.
Oh, my sister and I traveled with Dad a lot, and we walked flumes when they were just in construction, where there were just two 12 by 2s across the top, and we'd walk across that with swift running water. down them, and Mother would stand off to the side, you know, tearing her hair out. And Dad would say, leave them alone, you know, they've got to learn. So we had a great learning experience with him. A siphon was built across at Cascade Creek. Went from one side of the mountain over, looped down and up to the other. And I am sure it's not in use anymore. I didn't see it when we came around there. But I wanted to go up on that siphon. But that's one place Mother said, no, you can't go up. It's probably 1,000 feet up in the air. So he said, no, you can't do that. So that was one place. But we walked. We rode down the tram from, you know, go down Electra Lake into the Four Bay and then down the tram to the Tacoma plant, which is on the river. We passed on the rail yesterday. And that was great fun. It's just a bucket. It was just a bucket. You just climb in the bucket. And they pull you down, and then they pull you back.
A cable?
Works on a cable. The cable is still there. I didn't see the bucket. I don't know if it's still in use or not. But it was great fun. And then we spent much time at Electra Lake. The Electra Lake was a lake owned by the power company.
Mm-hmm.
And also in use for as a resort area. There were lots of cabins built there. And so it was a summer place for people to go in the summer. Not much in the winter because the roads pretty well were closed. It seems to me there must have been more snow then than there is now. I don't know the weather pattern, but we used to have a lot of snow in Durango. We'd plow through the main street with a pile of snow 10 feet high, I know, in the middle. And it was one-way traffic both ways. And I haven't heard of snow like that lately.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see what other things we used to do.
Well, tell, for those of us who are in there, describe a flume and a siphon. Could you, what those look like?
Well, it's a big pipeline. And you know how a siphon works. You put it here and the pressure pushes it down and up to a higher place, like siphoning gas out of a mm-hmm. gas tank. And it was to build up pressure to carry the water for power on down in a pipeline on down.
And what would the siphon have been made of in those days?
I suppose steel.
So it was a tube.
It was not stainless steel. That would have been way too expensive. It could have been aluminum
mm-hmm.
for the weight. I really don't know what it was made of. It could have been aluminum, because I imagine the weight of a thing would be pretty heavy with water in it. Mm-hmm. But I can't tell you that.
So it was like a tube?
That's yeah.
And how would it be, about a foot across, in diameter? Or?
Probably 18, maybe 24 inches.
Uh-huh.
Maybe bigger than that. Pretty good size.
Uh-huh.
So that makes me think more and more that it was some lightweight metal.
Yeah.
Aluminum, I would guess.
And it was hanging
yeah.
in the air.
Well, of course, it was suspended
yeah,
along.
But it was
yeah, with a big tripod
uh-huh.
suspensions. Yeah.
And you wanted to walk
and
on
I wanted
top
to walk
of
on it. But no, I couldn't do that.
And then describe a flume, maybe, in a little more
a
detail.
Flume, they, at that time, they were built wooden and watertight, mostly. Sometimes there'd be a leak, but mostly they were, and they were probably 5 feet in diameter, flat on the top, round on the bottom, and supported by wooden supports every probably 10 feet, maybe closer. And then they were just not enclosed at the top. When they were completed, there might have been 3 2x12s across the top. But they had to be open so they could see the flow of the water and see and clean them out and all that sort of thing to maintain them. But they carried water for power wherever the water needed to be carried. And I suppose maybe there's some of the old flumes left. I don't know. I didn't see any of them, but there must be some of the old ones left. But I don't know how they carry water for power anymore.
Yeah. How would they seal them? Seal that wood to hold the water in?
Probably with tar. Tar on the outside. It didn't have to be food safe, so
yeah.
I think probably tar.
Mm-hmm.
Not tar, creosote. I think it's creosote.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen creosote barrel sitting. Yeah, I think it was creosote probably. Yeah.
Now maybe we could go back a little and can you tell how your dad met your mom?
Mother was one of the early nurses that graduated from St. Luke's Hospital in Spokane, Washington. Now that's going way back. I think she graduated in about 1910 or something like that. And there weren't very many registered nurses at that time. They met, I think, at a church when Dad was singing in a choir and Mother was playing the organ. Hmm. And then she was not, and he wanted to get married. I don't know how long they went together or knew each other. But he wanted to get married and take her to Colorado. So it must have been about the time he was coming out here. And she was having such a wonderful time. She was, since there weren't so very many registered nurses, some of the wealthy people hired nurses to go on trips with them to take care of them. If they had any illnesses or any medications or anything, they took a nurse along with them. And she was having a good time going to California and going all around on nice train trips and so forth, and she didn't want to give all that up. So she said no, she didn't want to get married. So he's always said that it took him 7 years to get her to come to Colorado. So then they were eventually married in I don't know if they were married in Burke, Idaho, probably, and then moved to Colorado. They moved to Telluride. He was still working in Telluride. And that's where my sister was born in 1916.
What was her name?
Helen Jane.
Okay.
And her name now is Pingree.
Right.
Then they moved to Durango. His job was moved to Durango, so then I was born in Durango.
Now, why was the power company moving the job from Telluride to Durango?
Well, I think the opening was in Durango. I think that was probably when Dad went in to be a superintendent, and that was the main office. Hmm. Telluride was kind of, nowadays you'd call it a regional or a branch office. Durango was the main office, although there was a Durango plant. Telluride mostly served the lines that went to the Tomboy mine and some of the other mines. Mm-hmm. Silverton office would serve the mines around Silverton and the town and so forth.
Hmm. Now, what forms of transportation did your dad and your family use in, this would be the late 20s probably?
Well, they all had automobiles. When Dad was working up in the mountains, he did a lot of snowshoeing and skiing, because up in the mountains, if they had trouble, the crews would have to go up and take care of it. And lots of times he'd have to go up with them. So they did a lot of snowshoeing up in the mountains. Hmm. But in town, we had cars. I suppose they started driving cars. I have seen and ridden in an old Dodge that was about a 23. I suppose they probably started using cars and there's an old Hudson that was probably about 17 or 18. Hmm. But they, in Telluride, they had a, I don't know if they'd call it a surrey, but they had a surrey with a one horse. And I've seen pictures of that. It was a nice looking surrey, and they drove that around up in Telluride. I guess that was maybe one they rented or something. I don't think he had one. But yeah, automobiles were then in vogue, and the power company had automobiles. Hmm. He used to drive his automobiles just like any goat would go over a mountain. He'd drive a car any place. And I've seen him take a car up an absolute one car road up to a mine. In fact, I've been in the car with him when he'd meet a car. And he'd back one wheel off. No, he'd back the front wheel off so the car could come forward. And then he'd quick put that wheel back on and back the back one off.
Totally off the mountain.
Off the road. So that he could, so the other car could go by. And here's a gully down here, 500 feet. So, yeah, he was a great driver. He was, he knew all of the tricks about getting around in the mountains. So, but he was an interesting man. I learned a lot from him. I tagged around him all the time. He was a great guy.
Well, tell us a lot more about him. That's what we love to do in these interviews, is hear more about the person that's behind the name on the paper or the name on the back of the photo.
Well, I can tell you this about him. He had his plants just as slick and clean as you ever saw. The equipment was so clean you could eat off of it. And if he went into a plant, and all of his men knew this, if he went into a plant, he'd put on white gloves, and if he'd go across that, and if his glove got dust on it, or if he left a place, he'd put his initials. And they knew he'd been there, and they heard about it. So he was really a fanatic about keeping things clean, and his plants looked so pretty. Generators, I'm not just talking about the floor and the desks, I'm talking generators and power-making equipment. It was all just as clean and slick as you ever saw. And they knew he would do that. So he didn't do that around the house, but he did in the plants. Let's see, what else about him?
Do you think he had a practical reason for insisting that the plants were kept so clean?
Well, I think the reason is that when things are dusty and dirty, equipment doesn't work very well. You know, if you have a computer that has dust coming into it, it doesn't work. Even a typewriter, even anything that's got dust particles, they just don't work as well. And I think he was kind of fanatical about it, but on the other hand, he wanted to teach his men that there was a standard and they didn't drop below it. And they all knew it. He was kind of a hard man to get along with. He was very opinionated, as I am. I got it from him. And you're looking over at Liz. I guess she's laughing, maybe. But he was right so much of the time. And he was politically, he was opinionated. And in his job, he was. In his life, he was. But he was right, and he did awfully good work. And he didn't get along with people too well because of his opinionation. He just, people want to have more compromise, and he was not a compromiser. And I've never thought that was too bad.
Yeah. What were some of the things he held strong opinions about?
Oh, his political life and the way the plants were run.
Uh-huh. What was his political?
He was Republican.
Uh-huh.
And he was very anti New Deal, anything that was very moderate or liberal. That probably pretty well spells out that. His car driving. He taught me to drive by taking me out to the fairgrounds here in Durango. And it was just an open field, and I haven't been there. I don't know how it is now. But he got out of the car and said, "It's yours. I'm not going to ride with you." And then he stood by the side and say, "Now," and he would say, "Now go forward 5 feet." Then he'd say, "Back up 5 feet." And that was to teach me how to look at distance from a car. And then he'd say, "Go around the sandbag." It was a baseball field. "Go around, go 2 feet up to the sandbag. Now back up to that last sandbag. And now go around in a circle." And he did that for about an hour, and then we got in the car and went home, and we did it the next Sunday afternoon. That was a great way to teach me to drive.
And this was all shifting. You were having
yes.
to shift through
oh,
all
yeah.
that.
Yes, oh yeah, sure.
And how old would you have been about?
Probably 12. Yeah.
So how old were you when you were allowed to start driving on the road?
I think probably 15, 16. I never did have a car until I got out of college. So I drove the family car around a little bit, so I was probably 16. And that was an old Terraplane. They don't even make them anymore. You've probably never heard of it.
Don't.
It was a Dodge product, I think. And in fact, I've seen an old Terraplane lately that is being redone now. Yeah, that was, and it didn't last very long.
The production of that car.
Mm-hmm. Huh. I think it was only in production for probably 2 or 3 years.
Huh. Wonder why they stopped it.
I don't think it was very good. It wasn't marketable for some reason.
Uh-huh.
I like to drive it, but you know, that was the first car that I drove, so uh-huh. that was fun.
Now this week you are planning to drive up the Million Dollar Highway toward Grand Junction. Now how has that road changed?
That road hasn't changed much. There isn't very much you can do to that road. It was cut out of solid rock when Otto Mears first designed it. And so there isn't very many changes you can make to it.
Mm-hmm.
Even down Red Mountain, even on the straight way there, it just isn't very different.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other roads have changed quite a lot on the way to Grand Junction.
Mm-hmm.
We might go, probably go down to Cortez and Dolores and go around up to Telluride and
mm-hmm.
back to Ridgeway and over tomorrow when we leave.
How do you think that route has changed?
Well, I haven't been over it,
uh-huh.
so, and I haven't been up to Telluride, so I think I'd
yeah.
like to go up there. I know that's changed. It's tremendous change.
Yeah. Well, what else would you like to tell us about Durango when you were living here? Probably the earliest you could remember is the late 1920s or
mm-hmm.
starting 1930
yeah.
or so.
Well, I was in junior high school, or I was in from the first to the eighth grade in what was called junior high school then, and I don't know, that building was torn down. And I don't believe that was the Longworth School, was it?
It could be. Was it on Main? Just
it was no. on, it was on 12th and 5th.
Hmm.
And anyway, I went to the first to the eighth there, and then went to the four grades of high school. I don't know if they have three or four now, but I had four. At the Durango High School. Is that the Smiley Building
Smiley
now?
Smiley Building,
mm-hmm.
right near the library.
Yes,
uh-huh.
across from the library. And graduated from there. Graduated in 37.
What can you remember about what it was like to go to Durango High School?
Oh, I liked it. I was a good student. I enjoyed the classes. I can remember the teachers that I had, especially Pa Needham. He was a great, great friend of mine. Even after school, he was a friend. And Smiley, I liked Smiley. He was a little more standoffish. He wasn't really when you got to know him, but he presented a very austere personage because he needed to, as being superintendent of schools. He couldn't, you know, be real close to the students. But really, when you got to know him, he was fine. Werner Schneider was in woodworking in school at that time. I see there's a park named for him.
Yeah, Schneider Park.
And Dwight Dilley was there. And I can't remember some of the others, but I liked algebra, and now I can't even remember algebra, hardly, to do a problem. But our class was Pa Needham's son, Bill Needham, who has passed away now, was one of the real bright kids in school, and there were about five or six of us that entered the state finals in algebra, and we all came out top grades in the state, and we did that every year. It was just a group of kids that liked to study, you know, we weren't really squares, I don't think, but we just seemed to enjoy doing that. And so we were always very competitive. Bill was the valedictorian of our class, I believe, and I was salutatorian. And I've forgotten who the other people were. But we just enjoyed the competitiveness of the academics. And I'm not that way much anymore, but anyway, at that point it was. And we had a good orchestra. Had a lot of good people in the orchestra. Can't think of the name of the orchestra leader. And the band, we had a good marching band and a good concert band.
Did you play an instrument?
Yes, I played a flute and piccolo.
Uh-huh.
and sang in the glee club and did a lot of music in school. Took some organ lessons. Never was very interested in phys ed. That was not my deal. I had to take it, but I wasn't very much interested in it.
Was phys ed co-ed in those days?
No.
Did the boys and the girls took it separately?
No, it was separated.
Uh-huh. And did you take woodworking? You mentioned the woodworking teacher.
No, I knew Werner Schneider, but I didn't ever take woodworking. I probably would have liked it, but I don't know that any of the girls took at that point. Cooking and that sort of thing was what they were offered. I can't remember anybody that took woodworking. Now it's a usual thing, but it wasn't so much then.
Now, can you tell us some more about Werner Schneider?
Well, he was our...
I think I'll turn this over.
Okay.